this theme of waiting for at least a lot of things in life is tough. Now, we come to this text today, and I think, you know, you do realize that putting this into a New Testament context takes a lot of effort, because a lot of things that were done in this, it's hard to transfer over. So I've tried to do the best I can on it. Now, when we look at what the writer says here today, if we put it in the New Testament context, then it means we're to remain faithful. And he talks here in verse 10 about devotion. And he said, may you be blessed by the Lord. Again, God is central. Yahweh is central to this text. Never far removed from all the verses that we've studied. You have made this last kindness greater than the first. What's he talking about there? He's talking about the first kindness was being faithful and devoted to Naomi. The latter kindness was what we looked at last week when Ruth presented herself before Boaz basically with a marriage proposal. And here we have this dual devotion, if you will. On one end, she is devoted to Naomi. On the other end, she is devoted to Boaz. And so he says, your last kindness is even greater than your first. And it might not have worked out that way had Ruth not been a godly woman. And I think at this point she was a very godly woman. In that, you have not gone after young men. In the Hebrew, gone after always, or at least in this case, and not always, but in this case, it refers to sexual content. So in this case, you have not gone after young men, whether rich or poor. And one commentator, and I think he was probably right when he said this, the rich meaning you can, and the poor meaning you can either marry for love or you can marry for money. She could have done either one. She was probably an attractive woman. She could have had any guy that she wanted. She could have pursued that route. But something stuck out here. The fact is that she was a family person. She was devoted to her family. Now, when we come to the New Testament, and I started thinking about the New Testament, one of my favorite writers, I don't always agree with him, was Albert Barnes. Albert Barnes said this, it does not require great learning to be a Christian and be convinced of the truth of the Bible. It requires only an honest heart and a willingness to obey God. Albert Barnes, when I think of devotion, I think of him because back years ago when I studied the works of the 1800s, many of you would probably think, boy, that's really dry, and it was a lot of it. But Albert Barnes would wake up at 4 o'clock every morning. Most of his ministry was from about the 20s to the 50s of 1980. He would wake up at 4 o'clock every morning, faithfully light a candle, and write an entire works on the New Testament. Very, very faithful. What? 1880, thank you. See, that's a godly woman for you, straightening her husband out right here in the sermon. But notice, we shift now to the reward. She was faithful. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. The question is, why was she afraid? Why was she afraid? There's a list you could probably go by. But I think probably, I don't think she was afraid that Boaz was going to turn her down. And I don't think she was afraid because she wasn't a worthy woman. I think she was afraid of the gate. Because in the next chapter, Boaz is going to go to the gate with the elders. And I think probably she might have been worried about that event based on at least what we see coming after this. I did an interesting study this week. Proverbs 31 is very interesting. I put that in your notes. I want you to look at this. You don't have to go there now, but we're going to kind of quickly go through these. In Proverbs 31, and I think maybe some of this was based on Ruth. By the way, ladies, this would be a good characteristic to have in your lives. Young men, if you're looking for a woman to marry, this is a good list to look for. Number one, trustworthy. If you go back in Psalm 31 or Proverbs 31:11, talks about trustworthy. Talks about industry. Matter of fact, we've seen Ruth be trustworthy. Maybe King Lemuel, who wrote that proverb, maybe even thought about Ruth as he was writing it. Industry, remember, Ruth has been, she's been what? She's been gung-ho. She's gone out. She's gone into the fields. She had industry. Shrewdness. She was shrewd. Let me glean from what was left over. I think it's good. Generosity. She was very generous. Matter of fact, Ruth left her home to go with Naomi. These are all good qualities. Shrewdness is not a bad quality, by the way. Efficiency. That means you do things quickly, efficiently. Proverbs 31, and I thought about Ruth, and I thought, boy, that really characterizes her life. For us in the New Testament, whatever is pure, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is admirable, lovely, excellent, praiseworthy, think about these things. You know, guys, that a good name is better than anything? Boaz says, you don't need to worry about your name. Your name's good. By the way, it should be probably one of our goals in life as we think about the reward when we get to heaven. And he says, well done, thou good and faithful servant. It may be a good thing to focus on your name means everything and live your life in light of that fact. And sometimes you hear somebody's name and you go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know about him. The name is very, very important. I don't think Boaz was telling you, you're not going to have to worry about this. But you notice what he says, all that you ask, I will do. There is a reward here. It was based solely on her name. On how she had lived her life, what she had done, her devotion. And there is a reward coming, at least for Ruth and for us. There is a reward coming. And by the way, sometimes I wonder if God doesn't answer our prayers because of us. Whether we're following him at the time or not. I just kind of wonder. My own natural inclination is to wonder. I wonder if he's not answering my prayer because this isn't right in my life or whatever. Not only are we to remain faithful, but never lose heart. Let me just tell you this. I don't know what you're going through today. It could be a multitude of different things. Please don't lose heart. Never, never quit. Never give up. Again, patience comes through here in verse 12. And now, again, notice the shifts. And now, it is true that I am a redeemer. Remember, she laying at his feet. Still in this position. And he's saying, it is true that I am a redeemer, somebody that can take care of you and purchase you. And that is absolutely true. Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. We've been 10 years, or probably more than 10 years, since Naomi lost her family, since Ruth lost her husband. It's been 10 years, and we've read this through. We've read it through, and we go, okay, good, good. God showed up. It's not happenstance. It's not luck. God showed up, and now Boaz says, wait. It's one of my favorite movies of all times, The Remains of the Day. There's a spot in this movie. There's a spot in this movie right at the end of the movie. And I'm not, I thought about telling you, and then I go, well, no, then they won't watch the movie. But I think it's a great movie. I'll tell you this right now. You will not like this movie if you're into Arnold Schwarzenegger or Terminator or one of those movies, because there's no, you have to actually think in this movie. and it requires intellect. Yeah. So to all of you guys that just like blowing up, you're not going to like this movie. However, at the end of the movie, there's something that happens and you're thinking, right now it's going to happen, and I'll just leave it there. Boo. No, you got to leave them hanging. You got to leave them hanging. Yes. And you want this to happen so badly, and you're right here. I think the writer here is trying to give them just that, wait a minute, it's almost there, but wait a minute, there's somebody that is closer than me. Now, what did he mean by that, closer than me? What he meant was this: you have a relative that is closer, somebody that is actually rightfully able to do this. Do you know what that says to me? Boaz was a man of integrity. You know what he could have done? Just kind of silently said, okay. He was a person of integrity. Now you notice here, we go on and read, remain tonight and in the morning. There's a promise here, by the way, even in this patient moment. If he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. Again, remain the night. Boaz, a man of integrity, and he was watching out for Ruth. Can you imagine the woman, Ruth, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and trying to walk back home in the dark? That's not good. Remain the night. You just stay here. He makes a promise to her. One of the phrases that I thought was interesting was, as the Lord lives. He's saying, by the life of Yahweh, if he will not redeem you, I make a covenant with God. And he expects, by this phrase, as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. He's saying, I promise to wed you and to take care of you if the other redeemer does not do it. And he's expecting this with some type of retribution if he doesn't, because he's saying, by the life of God, if this person won't do it, I will, and I will take care of you. So here we have this moment now where I think Ruth, or Boaz, makes a covenant with Ruth. But then I think this next verse is what gets me, the rest part. Watch. So she lay at his feet till morning. One of my favorite psalms is Psalm 121, 3 through 6. The one who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never sleeps or slumbers. The Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. I think this is a good picture. You remember in the New Testament where Mary was at the feet of Jesus? The other Mary was up walking, moving, doing, and she was just at the feet of Jesus. You know what I think we need to do in our lives at times? Seriously? I think we just need to rest. I think we just need to maybe say, you know what, God? I know that you watch over me. I know that you never sleep. And just rest. You guys ever get tired of struggling? You know, you can do that for a long time. You can do that for a long time, but eventually you burn out. And I guess there comes a time in life when you've done everything that you can do. Ruth has done everything that she can possibly do. And then you just simply got to say, I'm resting. When was the last time you had spiritual rest? I'm not talking about physical rest. I could have used actually probably 3 more hours last night myself, but when was the last time you took a spiritual rest? Guys, I think it's so important when you talk about losing heart and you feel like you keep going and keep going and keep going and you just can't go anymore. Maybe it's at this point. Maybe it's at this point in your life, wherever you are. Please take this with love. Maybe you just need to say, you know what? I'm just going to trust God. There's been times in my life that I've run and run and run and run and run, and you just get to a point where you say, you know what? I got to trust Him. Maybe you're there today. Let me just encourage you as your pastor to be patient, to wait on God, and to know that God is there. And by the way, we're going to hit this again, but wait patiently on God. Remember that last verse that we read? Naomi said to Ruth, you got to wait. We're not there yet, but let's watch. But wait patiently on God. Look at verse 15. And he said, and this is Boaz to Ruth, bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out. He's not talking about taking off her clothes and bringing him the garment. So she held it. And he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. Now, this is very interesting. I really enjoyed tracing this myself. So the question is, and I think this is a pretty good picture. I don't want you to pay attention so much to this, because I don't think that was what the garment she was wearing. That was probably a towel, but I think there's a misinterpretation here, at least in my part. I want you to take a look at this. This head covering that Ruth wore. Now, this is a very interesting theory. Matter of fact, he goes, I want you to look at it. He measured out six measures of barley, and he put it on her. Now, as I went back and I looked at this, by the way, that's barley. That's awesome. Kind of makes me hungry. What are we doing for lunch? No, we don't know. We don't know yet, right? Okay. Barley. It's awesome, barley. 6 measures of barley would have been about 58 to 95 pounds. Depends on how you measure it. Let me do something that really is a great picture here. Okay, when I went back and traced this head covering, it's possible that they bound all this up when Ruth held it out, put that barley on there, she bound it up and stuck it on her head. And then I started thinking, wait a minute, they did carry it on their heads, but usually it was pots. So the second thing enters my mind is how would she carry that? By the way, the word garment is used, I'm getting somewhere, please stay awake. 1 Kings 18:46 says this, and the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he gathered up his garment, same word, and ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. Here's what I'm thinking, folks, and I believe it's right. They could have worn it on their head. Never did they wear it on their back. And this is my thought. Wow, this is awesome. I think it's just flat out awesome. I think this was probably looped around front and put in front of Ruth. You say, well, why is that so awesome? Boaz would put this on her. She goes back to the gate. What is that the illusion of? Pregnancy. It's the illusion of pregnancy. Do you know? You do know what happens, right? I think within this, there is a reward. There is a reward for Ruth, obviously. But I think probably here we have an image of the promise of God that she would become pregnant. I am with you. I just got that image in my mind and thought about it. What a beautiful picture. We do know that these six measures of barley he gave to me. Well, let's go back up to verse 16. And when she came to her mother-in-law, Naomi said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Actually, the real question she was asking is, "Are you married?" How did you fare? Real question, are you married? Then she told her mother-in-law all that had been done for her. In other words, the writer now assumes that we know the entire story, what took place, saying, "These six measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law." And by the way, six measures of barley is a huge reward. And I just thought about the image, how that would look to Naomi as Ruth came. And by the way, do you know that we're going to be rewarded? How many of you know that someday when you see Jesus, you're going to be rewarded? I love this clip. So all you guys that like football, you like this.
With 2 seconds left on the clock, the Eagles have got a shot in the football game. Seconds, Grant. We've got time for a Hail Mary.
No, the defense too strong for the pass.
No, we can't run it. That's our only option.
You got to kick it, man.
David.
I need a 51-yard field goal.
Coach, I can't kick that far.
David, they've been stopping the run and the pass all night. You're my best option.
Coach, the farthest I've ever kicked is a 39-yarder. There's no way I can kick a 51-yard field goal.
I believe you can. Your job is to do the best you can to leave the results up to God. I need you on that field.
Our field goal unit.
Grant, we've got to throw it. He can't kick it from there. It's too far.
No, it's not.
What are you doing?
I'm preparing for rain.
I don't understand this, but with 2 seconds left on the clock, Coach Grant Taylor and the Shiloh Eagles are putting the game in the hands of a 145-pound backup kicker.
This is not a good move on Grant Taylor's part. He even has to kick into the wind.
He's not ready, Granny. Don't think he can do it.
I don't have any more timeouts. Call a timeout, Bobby Lee.
This kid can't kick that far.
Call that timeout.
Call a timeout anyway, and let's ice him.
Dad, come here.
David, you telling yourself you're going to miss this kick?
Coach, it's too far.
Listen to me. Do you think God could help you make this kick? Do you believe it, David?
Yeah, if he wants to.
So do I. But you have got to give me your best and leave the rest up to him. Will you do that for me? David, whether you make this field goal or not, we're going to praise him. But don't you walk off this field having done any less than your best.
I thought about cutting the kick off just as he fell and telling you that he missed it wide left. You see the celebration at the end of that? You know there's going to be a celebration when we get to heaven? I love that picture where the father says, I'm standing for my son. God's standing for you in Christ. You do know that. Someday we will see Jesus face to face. This is such a wonderful reminder. Notice that God is in control of this whole thing, that there is a reward-giving Ruth. She has to wait for it. By the way, that's like us. We know that there's a reward coming. We have to wait for it. Someday we will end that and go home to be with Him, and there will be a celebration in heaven. Wow. But right now we got to play the game here, and sometimes the game's hard. I want to encourage it. Wait patiently on Him. And then lastly, well, not lastly, I wanted to remind all of us this. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also all who loved His appearing. This is ours, guys. This crown of righteousness, this crown of life will be ours when we cross that finish line. Ruth has been given a promise. She's had to wait for it for quite a while, but now the promise is in hand. What I like about this so much is that Ruth's life parallels our life in a lot of the things that we struggle with. Yes, it was all about family for her. And it was about generation and line, which, by the way, we'll get into in the last section. And it was important that God's divine providence was involved in that. Lastly, this command here to wait patiently. Notice we read it at the beginning. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out. For the man will not rest. You rested, but the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. Do you remember back in 3 or 4 sermons ago? I've actually gone a lot slower through Ruth than I actually thought I would. I thought we'd be 4 and out, 4 weeks and done, but then I'd started really looking at this and can't. Do you remember back in where Ruth happened to come to the field of Boaz? And we talked about that word, happened. It really wasn't a happen. I think a lot of people live their Christian lives like this. They think that everything is random chance. Our lives are not ordered by chance. Our lives are ordered by God. Everything that happens to you, you can't go, oh, wow, what great luck. That means good things. And that also means bad things. It's ordered by God. There is nothing that can happen to you that hasn't first passed through His throne. Absolutely nothing. I defy you in the Bible to show me where that's not true. Everything that comes your way is designed by God. Otherwise, if God does not have your life ordered and the stuff that happens to you is surprising to God and it's a shock to Him, then in my mind, God ceases to be God. But I can tell you this, no matter what men do, and they may mean it to against you for evil, God can flip it and use it for good. So we live, wow, what luck. Look what happened to me. Oh, this was really bad luck. Take that. I need something here. Take that theology. Emmett's going to kill me for that. Take that theology and throw it away, please. God has ordered our steps. He knows your life, and He will use those things that you get confronted with every day to make you better, stronger, or He will take those things in life to make you more faithful to Him. Your life is not about luck, folks. It is not about the roll of a dice. And you can look at Ruth's life. You could sit back and look at Ruth's life. Wow, what amazing luck that she happened to be in the field that day. What amazing luck that she married into this family and she had losses. She had a loss of her husband. Yes, Naomi had the loss. Wow, what, that's just unbelievable luck. And then it's unbelievable luck that they went back to Israel. And boy, it's unbelievable luck that she just happened to be in that field at just the right time, at just the right moment. And she meets, but what kind of chances are those? God cared about every aspect of Ruth's life. You do realize this too, that everything that you lose in this life, you will get back. You say, well, Pastor, what about, I know a pastor. He's in his late 70s. He had 6 children. All of them are gone except one. He still loves the Lord. I've seen people have to go through hardship and trial and pain and suffering and loss, and those are horrific. It's rough. But God knows that. Matter of fact, as detailed as God is here, and he shows up. We've seen this. He has shown up in this book over and over and over. In every chapter, Yahweh's in there. He's underneath, undergirding everything. As he did with Ruth, guess what? He's doing with your life and with mine. There's no chance. There's no luck. But the Christ that redeemed you and saved you is the Christ that will sustain you. And while you're waiting on God, this is what I want you to do. I want you to rest. Me too. And I want you to trust. Can you do that this week? No matter where you are in your life, and I don't want to make light of, you know, suffering and all those things, but at some point we've got to get, me, you, all of us, we've got to get to a point where we just say, I'm tired. Yes, you remain faithful. You do those things that you're called to do. Never, ever, 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 ever lose heart. God's there with you. And by the way, you just wait patiently on him. How many of you are tired today? You can't hide from me. Some of y'all are tired. I'm not talking physically. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to open up the altar this morning. This is between you and God. I just open this up for everybody. If you've got a burden that you've been hanging on to, I don't care about numbers and, oh, we got 45 people up the altar. That's not what I'm doing this. I think sometimes it is helpful that if you have a burden, that just by getting up and coming forward and making a physical appearance at this altar, you may be saying to yourself, I'm getting up and I'm giving this burden to God and leave it here. Please be mindful of this, that God's big enough to handle it. And he'll take that burden from you and you can rest. So I would say when you're waiting on God, which by the way, I think this, the most obscure part of this text, I think, is the solution to waiting on God. And that was when Boaz said, go to bed, rest. Maybe you need to rest today. You do that. You bring your burdens up here and lay them at this altar and let God take them. And then leave and just leave them here and let God deal with them. He's better at it than we are.